OSHA, Tao, The Three Treasures, Volume 3. Talks on fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching. Given at the OSHO Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 1.
Bhagwan, on pursuit of knowledge, Lao Tzu says, without stepping outside one's doors, one can know what is happening in the world. Without looking out of one's windows, one can see the Tao of heaven. The further one pursues knowledge, the less one knows. Therefore the sage knows without running about, understands without seeing, accomplishes without doing.
Religion is not knowledge. It is knowing. Knowledge is of the mind. Knowing is of the being. And the difference and the distance is tremendously vast. The difference is not only quantitative, it is qualitative. Knowledge and knowing, they are as different as heaven and hell, earth and the sky. So the first thing to understand is the difference between knowledge and knowing. Knowledge is never of the present. It is always of the past. The moment you say you know, it is already a dead thing. It has already left its marks on the memory. It is like dust clinging to you. You have already moved away from that. Knowing is always immediate. Knowing is here and now. You cannot say anything about it. You can only be. The moment you say, even knowing becomes knowledge. That's why all those who have known, they say, it cannot be said. The moment you say, the very nature of it changes. It has become knowledge. It is no more the beautiful, alive phenomena of knowing. Knowing has no past. It has no future. It has only the present. And remember, present is not part of time. People ordinarily think that time is divided between past, future and present. They are absolutely wrong. Time is divided between past and future. Present is not a part of time at all. You cannot catch hold of it in time. Pursue it and you will miss. Try to grasp it, and it will always be out of your reach, because it is part of eternity, not part of time. Present is eternity crossing time. It is a meeting point where eternity and the temporal meet. In the present is knowing. In the past is knowledge. And knowledge creates future. Past creates future. Future is a byproduct of the past. Whenever you know, you start planning. The more you know, the more you plan. Planning means the future. Knowing means the past. When you don't allow the future freedom, you try to fix it into the pigeon holes of the past. You would like it to be just a repetition of the past, howsoever modified, decorated, but just a repetition of the past. A man of knowledge is a man of planning, and life is an unplanned flow. Life is freedom. You cannot pigeonhole it. You cannot categorize it. That's why a man of knowledge misses life. He knows much, and he knows nothing. He knows too much, and he is just empty and hollow. You cannot find more shallow a person than a man of knowledge. He is just surface and surface. He has no depth, because depth comes through eternity. Time is horizontal. It moves in a line on the horizon. Eternity is vertical. It moves into depth and height. That is the meaning of Jesus' cross. Time crossing eternity, or eternity crossing time. Jesus' hands are time. They move into past and future, crucified in time, resurrected into eternity. His being is vertical. Everybody's being is vertical. Only the body, the hands, the material part of you is horizontal. Knowledge creates future. Future creates worry. The more you know, the more worried, the more uneasy, never at ease at home. A deep trembling inside. It is a pathology. A man of knowing is totally different. He lives here. This moment is all. As if tomorrow exists not. And really it exists not. It has never existed. It is part of the game of the mind. It is a dream of the man of knowledge. This moment is all and the total. Knowing moves into this moment vertically, goes deeper and deeper and deeper. A man of knowing has depth. Even in his surface is nothing but part of depth. He has no superficial surface. His surface is also part of depth. And a man of knowledge, he has no depth. His depth is also part of his surface. And this is the paradox, that a man of knowing knows, and the man of knowledge does not know. cannot know, because knowledge cannot meet life. That is the barrier. On the contrary, the only barrier, the hindrance, it is just like this. A mother knows that the child is hers. A father has knowledge that the child is his. The father has only a belief. Deep down, he does not know. Only a mother knows. It happened. Mulla Nasruddin was working as a wazir to a small kingdom. The king was very generous, not very rich. The kingdom was small, but still very generous. Every year Nasruddin will come and tell him that my wife has given birth to a child, and he will give valuable presents to him, to the child, to the mother. But then it became too much, because it was every year. When the 12th child was born and Nasruddin came, the king said, "Now, Mulla, it is too much. And the world is suffering too much with population. And what you are doing, if you go this speed, you will create a small nation. You go on every year. Stop it. Let this child be the last. And if you cannot stop, if you are unable to stop, then it is better to commit suicide rather than to overburden the earth." Nasruddin was very depressed. Then the 13th child was born. What to do? So he thought, it is better now not to go to the king. Go to the forest and commit suicide, because the king has said. So he went to the forest. He prepared everything to hang himself. Just a split second and he would have been hanging under the tree dead. Suddenly he said, "Nasruddin, beware, you may be hanging the wrong man." A father simply believes. A mother knows. Knowing is like a mother. Knowledge is like a father. All knowledge is belief. Knowing is not belief. It is knowing. It is your perception. It is your vision. It is your growth. It is just like the mother. The child grows in her womb. She knows the child is her part, her own extension, her own being, blood and bone. A father is extrinsic. He is not intrinsic. He simply believes that the child is his. A man of knowledge believes that he knows. A man of knowing knows. Knowing is a transformation in your being. It is like pregnancy. You have to carry it. You have to give birth to yourself. A resurrection into eternity. A turning away from time and moving in no time. A conversion from mind to no mind. But something so tremendous that you know it is happening in you. A man of knowledge goes on collecting dust from Buddhas. Those who have known, he believes in them. Whatsoever he believes is dead. He has not given birth to himself. He has collected knowledge from others. Everything borrowed. And how knowledge can be borrowed? How being can be borrowed? And if knowledge is going to be true, it is going to be of the nature of being. George Gurdjieff used to ask people, seekers who will come to him. The first thing he used to ask is, are you interested in knowledge or being? Because here we give being, and we are not concerned about knowledge. So you decide well. If you are concerned with knowledge, go somewhere else. If you are concerned with being, then remain here. But make a very, very clear decision. What is the difference between being and knowledge? The same as the difference between knowledge and knowing. Knowing is being. It is not something that is being added to you. It is something you grow into. Knowledge is something which is added to you. You don't grow through it. Rather, you carry it as a burden. So you will always find a man of knowledge burdened, heavily burdened. Mountains of knowledge he is carrying on his soldiers. You will see his face very serious, deadly serious, and his heart completely crushed under the burden. A man of knowing is weightless. He has nothing to carry. He can fly into the sky. The gravitation of the earth does not affect him. He is not pulled towards the earth, because the earth can pull only that which is heavy. He remains on the earth, but he is not of the earth. That is the meaning of Jesus saying, he says again and again, my kingdom is not of this world. Some other world, the world of being, of eternity. If you understand the distinction well, then remember never to move on the path of knowledge. Move on the path of knowing, being. Because only then you gain something. Not that you have more information, but that you become more. And that is the crucial point to be understood. You have to become more. Your poverty is not of information. Your poverty is of being. You are poor. And you go on hiding that poverty through accumulating things. And knowledge is also a thing. Words, theories, philosophies, systems, theologies, all things, subtle, abstract, but still things. you are not growing. You remain the same. And you create a delusion around you that you have come to know. These sutras of Lao Tse have to be understood in this light. Without stepping outside one's doors, one can know what is happening in the world. Because deep down you are the world. World is nothing you writ large. In fact, there is no need to go anywhere to know anything. If you know yourself, you have known the whole humanity. If you know your anger, you have known all angers. If you know your violence, you have known all wars. There is no need to go to Vietnam, no need to go to Korea, no need to go to Palestine or anywhere. If you know your violence, you have known all violence. If you know your love, you have known all, the whole history of love. Never written, never known, even that you have known. Because you are the seed. It is just like you take a drop of water from the ocean. You analyze that drop. You have known the whole ocean if you know the drop. Because in the small drop, the whole ocean is condensed. It is a miniature ocean. If you analyze the drop and come to know that it consists of H2O, you know that the whole ocean consists of H2O. Now there is no need to go on and on and on. One drop is enough. If you know the taste of one drop, that it is salty, you know that the whole ocean is salty. And that drop is you. Without stepping outside one's doors, one can know what is happening in the world. Because you are the world, an atomic world. And everything is happening in you. It may be happening on a vaster scale in the world. The quantity may be more, but the quality is the same. Understanding oneself, one understands all. There is a beautiful story in the Upanishads. A young man, Swetketu, came back from his guru's house, from his gurukul, the family of his guru. Learned, and of course, as young men are bound to be, very proud of his learning. Egoistic. His father, the seer Uddalak, looked him coming. He was coming, entered the village. The father looked him from the window. The father became sad. This is not learning. He has become a man of knowledge. This is not knowing. Uddalak said to his own heart, I had never sent him for this. He missed the point. He wasted his life. Because knowing is humble. Not humble in the sense that it is opposite to ego. It is not related to ego at all. Not even as an opposite. Because even the opposite carries something. not feeling that he is humble, the father became very, very sad. He is getting old, and here comes this boy wasting many years of his life. Why he looks so proud? Knowing always makes you humble. This word humble is beautiful. It comes from the root humid. The root meaning means ardi, of the earth, non-pretentious. And the same root is the base of the word human and humanity. You become human only when you become humble. You become humble only when you are of the earth. Of the earth in the sense, unpretentious, simple, unconditioned, ardi. Here comes this son, so proud and haughty. He must have become a man of knowledge, and he had become. He came. He touched his father's feet, but it was just a formality. How can a man who has become so egoistic bow down? The father said, Swetketu, I see your body bent, but not you. And what misfortune has happened to you? Why you look so haughty? A man of knowing becomes humble, Swetketu. Have you heard anything about that one, knowing which one knows all? Swetketu said, what are you talking about? How can one know all by knowing one? Absurd. I have known all that could be known in the university. I have become as profound as one can become, and all the subjects that are taught there. I have exhausted the whole possibility of learning. When my master said to me, now you know all and you can go back home, then only I have come back. But about what you are talking, that one never heard. Nobody talked about it in the university. Grammar, we learned, language, history, myth, philosophy, theology, religion, poetry, everything that is known to man I have learned, and I have become proficient, and I have attained to the highest degree that the university can confer. But we never heard about that one. What are you talking about? Have you gone mad? How can one know all by knowing one? Udalak said, yes, that one is you. Svetketu Tattvamasi, that art thou. If you know this one, you will know all. And all that you have known is just rot. You have wasted your energy. Go back. Never come again unless you know that one, by knowing which all is known. Because, said Uddalak to his son, that in our family, no one has been a Brahmin just by the name. We have called ourselves Brahmins because we have known the Brahma. and that you don't belong to our family if you don't know that one. Go back. That one are you. That art thou. A very small seed, almost invisible to yourself, unless you search deep and search long with perseverance and patience, you will not encounter it. That seed is within you. That is your withinness. And the whole vast world is nothing but you written on a large canvas. Man is humanity. You are the world. Says Lao Tzu, without stepping outside one's doors, one can know what is happening in the world. Without looking out of one's windows, one can see the Tao of heaven. There is no need to look out of the windows. Windows are your senses. Eyes, ears, nose, these are the windows. There is no need to look from these windows. Without looking out of one's windows, one can see the Tao of heaven. You can see the ultimate within. Have you seen Buddha images sitting silently with closed eyes, unmoving? There are stories in India that people remain in meditation for so long that birds settled on their bodies. They made their nests in their hairs. Ants crawled so long on them that they forget. These ants forget completely that here sits a man. They started living there. What these men were doing, creepers crawled on their body, thinking that it is a good support. So unmoving, what they were doing there. They were not doing anything. Closing all their windows, they were looking at the splendor of splendors. They were looking at themselves. And it is such a tremendous mystery and such a beautiful phenomenon that nothing like it can ever be encountered anywhere else. Because wherever you go and whatsoever you see, the report will be secondhand. I can see your face, but my eyes will be the mediators. They will report. I will never be able to see your face directly. It will be always indirect. I can go to a rose bush and look at the beautiful flowers, but that beauty is secondhand because my eyes will report. There is an agency. I cannot come in direct contact with the rose. The eyes will always be there. The smell will come through the nose. I can listen to the singing birds, but that song will always be secondhand. And unless you know firsthand, how can you know the Tao of heaven? How can you know the ultimate? the very, and that is inside yourself. Close all the doors and windows and move within. It happened. One of the most wise women ever born was Rabia al-Adawiya. She was a Sufi, a great mystic, incomparable. She was sitting inside her hut with closed eyes, doing something nobody knows what. One other mystic of the name Hasan was staying with her, and it was morning, and the sun started coming up, and it was tremendously beautiful, and the birds singing, and the trees happy again to see the light, and the whole world celebrating the morn. Hasan stood there. Then he called Rabia, saying, "Rabia, come out. See the glory of God. What a beautiful morning." Rabia said, "Hasan, rather on the contrary, you come in and see God Himself." There I know is beauty, the beauty of creation, but it is nothing compared to the beauty of the Creator. So rather you come in. I don't know whether Hasan understood or not. But this is the whole thing. Knowledge goes out. When you go out, you can know many things, but it will be information, second hand. That's what science is. Science is always second hand. It can never be first hand. It can never have that freshness which religion can have. Howsoever deep an Einstein goes, the depth will be of the outside. He cannot come fresh out of it. And he felt it in his last days. Somebody asked Albert Einstein, just before 2-3 days he died, that what would you like if there is another opportunity given by God to you to come to the earth? What would you like to become? He said, next time, rather than becoming a scientist, I would prefer to become a plumber. I would like to live a simple and ordinary life. I would like to live absolutely unknown to the outer world. I would like to live anonymously. Nobody knows about me, so that nobody disturbs. He's groping in the right direction. He is groping in the same direction where he can become a Buddha any day. When one gets fed up from the outside, one turns in. Then one would like to close all the doors and all the windows and just rest within. Without looking out of one's windows, one can see the Tao of heaven. Science goes on discovering laws and laws and laws but it will never discover the La. And the La is the meaning of the word Tao. Science will go on discovering gods and gods and gods, but it will never discover the God. And the God is the meaning of the word Tao. The very ultimate, beyond which nothing exists. Beyond which nothing is possible. Science goes on discovering. And every day, the more science discovers, the more old theories are discarded and thrown into the rubbish. And this is going to happen to every scientific theory, one day or other. All scientific theories are doomed to be thrown into the rubbish heap, because they don't know Dila. They are only reflections in the lake, not the real moon. The real moon is within, and the whole world functions as a mirror. When you see beauty in a rose flower, have you ever pondered over the fact, is the beauty there in the rose flower? Or the beauty is poured by you? Because there are moments when you pass from the same rose bush, but nothing happens. The rose then is not a rose. Nothing is special, nothing extraordinary, just an ordinary rose. But in another moment, and another mood, and another state of mind, suddenly it takes a beauty, a flavor, a new dimension it becomes. Doors open, mysteries are revealed. What is happening is that the rose is just a mirror. Whatsoever you pour into it, you see. You come before a mirror, you look in the mirror. The mirror simply mirrors you. It is you. If you are ugly, the mirror reports an ugly figure inside. If you are beautiful, the mirror reports beauty. There are moments when you are ugly, then all roses become ugly. There are moments when you are sad, then all moons become sad. There are moments when you are in hell, then the earth becomes the hell. You create reality around you. You project reality around you. You have within you the Creator, the one by knowing which all is known. That's why in aesthetics, for centuries, thinkers have been trying to define what beauty is and have not been able to define it. They cannot. Because it does not exist there outside. It is a pouring from the within. The rose flower is not beautiful. You create the beauty around it. It is just like a path. You hang beauty on it. It becomes beautiful. That's why when a poet passes, the rose flower is so beautiful you cannot conceive. And then passes a scientist, absolutely oblivious of the fact that the rose has blown. that the rose is blooming, that the rose exists. Then passes the businessman, he looks at the rose and thinks how much he can earn out of it if he sells it. Then comes a child, plucks the rose, plays for a few moments, forget about it, goes on his way. The rose is nothing. It is you who bring the meaning to it. People come to me every day and they ask again and again in thousand and one ways, what is the meaning of life? There is no meaning. You bring meaning to it. You create meaning. Meaning is not an objective fact. So don't look meaning and don't search for meaning. If you go on searching, you are bound to come to the truth that life is meaningless. That's how existentialists in the West have come to discover that life is meaningless. And they have stopped there, which is very unfortunate. In the East, we have come to know it, but we never stopped there. Buddha also came to know that life is meaningless, but he never stopped there. This is stopping halfway. Life is meaningless, but that doesn't mean that your life need to be meaningless. No. Life is meaningless if you don't bring meaning to it. There is no meaning in it. The meaning has to be given to it. You pour down your being into life, it becomes vibrant with meaning. Then it sings, it dances, it becomes divine. People ask me, where is God? Can you show us? I cannot show you God. Nobody can show you. Because God has to be found within. Then you can see anywhere. Then in a rose you will see. The rose will become the mirror. And you will see God. Then a bird singing in the morning. And suddenly the note takes a flower which was never there. You contributed it. It becomes divine. Once the God is discovered within, everything becomes divine. If you have not discovered it within, and you go on asking where is God, and you go on asking about his address, you will never reach. And all addresses are false. Because he lives within you, he needs no address. There is a beautiful story, very ancient. It is said that the God created the world. Everything was beautiful. Then he created man, and everything became horrible. With man entered hell. And the man started complaining. And it became almost impossible for God to sleep or to do anything. So many people, and they go on knocking at his door day and night, and it became a nightmare. He must have thought many times to destroy man so that the peace of the world can be regained. But then some wise counselor said him, there is no need to destroy man. You simply change your abode. You don't live here on this earth. He used to live here because of you. he had to leave his abode. So he said, where should I go? One counselor said, it is good you go to the Everest. God said, you don't know. Sooner or later, there will come a man named Hilary, and he will reach, and the whole thing will start again. Then somebody suggested, go to the moon. He said, you don't know. These things won't help much. Sooner or later, man is going to reach everywhere. Suggest to me something where he will not even suspect. Then an old counselor came near him, said something into his ear, and he nodded. He said, yes, that you are right. The old man suggested, then you hide within man. He will never suspect. He will search and seek everywhere except his own inner world. The story is beautiful, almost factual. Not a story, but a truth. Without looking out of one's windows, one can see the Tao of heaven. The farther one pursues knowledge, the less one knows. Looks paradoxical, but only looks paradoxical. It is not. A simple fact. The more one pursues knowledge, the less one knows. Go to the pandits. They know so much. And look into their eyes, and not even a glimmer. Watch them, not even a gesture of knowing. Be with them. And there is nothing, they are hollow. Absolutely false. Nothing inside. Just a painted hollowness, decorated hollowness, decorated by many scriptures. Words of those who have known, but all borrowed. All dead. And surrounded by these dead words, they have almost become dead themselves. Go to a man of knowledge and you will taste dust around him. He may look very, very old and ancient, almost in the grave, but you will not find the freshness that is part of life. You will not see a living river in him, flowing, moving always into the unknown. Knowledge is a limitation. Howsoever vast, but a limitation is still. That's why Socrates says that when I was young, I thought I knew all. When I became a little mature, I started suspecting. And I came to realize that I don't know that much. When I really became old, I realized that I don't know at all. It happened. The oracle at Delphi declared that Socrates is the wisest man on earth today. People who heard this came to Socrates and they said, this is a paradox. And we are puzzled. Then who is right? If the oracle is right, then you are wrong. If you are right, then the oracle is wrong. And neither can be wrong. We believe in you. We have known you. We have been around you. We have felt that you must be true. Whatsoever you say, it cannot be a lie. But the oracle, the divine oracle, he has never been found saying lies. All that has been predicted by the Delphi oracle has always been found true. So we are in a fix. You help us. You say you don't know anything. In fact, you say that you know only one thing, that you know nothing. And then comes this oracle and says that Socrates is the wisest man on the earth. Socrates said, there must have been some misunderstanding. Because I know myself more than anybody can know about me. And I tell you again that I know nothing. At the most, this much I can permit, that I know that I know nothing. Nothing more. You go and ask the oracle again. There has been some misunderstanding. Either you have not interpreted it rightly or something else. Go again. They went again and they asked the oracle, and the oracle laughed and said, that's why we say he is the wisest man on the earth. Because only he knows that he knows nothing. There is no paradox. That is the indication of a wise man, that he has come to realize that knowledge is futile, that knowledge knows nothing, that knowledge is rubbish, that knowledge is nonsense, howsoever logical it pretends, but those are all pretensions. The further one pursues knowledge, the less one knows. Why it happens? Because the further you pursue knowledge, the further you are going away from yourself. The more you try to find the truth somewhere out from the home, in search of the home, further away from yourself, in search of your authentic being. Further away from your consciousness. In search. What are you searching? That which you are searching is already within you. Religion is the search of that which is already the case. Religion is the search of that which is already the reality. If you go further away from yourself, less and less you will know. And you will think more and more you are knowing. Scriptures you will know. Words you will know. Theories. And you can go on spinning. And you can go on weaving more and more out of these words. And you can make palaces in the air. But they cannot be more than airy. Abstract. They don't exist. They are made of the same stuff as dreams. Thoughts and dreams are made of the same stuff. They are ripples on the surface of an ocean. They have nothing substantial in them. If you want to know the truth, come back home. I always say, seek and you will miss. Don't seek and find. Because the very effort to seek means that you have taken it for granted that it is not with you already. From the very beginning, your search is doomed. One day, seeking, searching, accumulating knowledge, the fact will strike home that you are a fool. It would have been better, before going into the vast world to seek, you should have looked inside. Again, a small parable of Rabia al-Adawiyya. One evening, the sun is setting, and the neighborhood found her searching something on the street. Old woman, and everybody loved her. Of course, everybody thought her a little crazy, but a beautiful person. So they all rushed to help her, and they asked, "What has been lost? What are you searching?" She said, "My needle. I was doing some needlework, and I have lost my needle. Help me. You are so kind." So they all engaged into the search. Then one man, seeing the fact that the teeth is so big and the needle is such a small, tiny thing, unless we exactly know where it has been dropped, it will be almost impossible to find it. So he came to Rabia and said, "Tell us exactly the spot." Rabia said, "Don't ask that, because in fact, I have not lost it outside my house. I lost it inside." They all stopped searching and said, "Crazy woman, then why are you searching here outside in the street when you have lost it inside the house?" Rabia said, "There is much darkness. Here is a little light. How can you seek when there is darkness? And you know I am poor. Not even a lamp with me. How can you seek when there is darkness? So I am seeking here because still a little sunlight is left. And still something can be done to search." The people started laughing. They said, "You are really crazy. We know that in darkness it is difficult to search. But then the only way is to borrow a lamp from somebody and search it there." Rabia said, "I never thought you people are so wise. Then why you seek always outside?" "I was just following your ways. If you are so understanding, why don't you borrow a lamp from me and search inside? I know there is darkness." This parable is meaningful. You search outside, there is a reason. Because inside there is everything so dark. You close your eyes and there is dark night. You cannot see anything. Even if something is seen, it is nothing but a part of the outside reflected in the inner lake. Thoughts floating, which you have gathered in the marketplace, faces coming up and going, but they belong to the outside world. Just reflections of the outside and vast darkness. One becomes afraid. Then one thinks it is better to seek out. There is a light at least. But that is not the point. Where you have lost your truth, where you have lost your being, where you have lost your God, where have you lost your happiness, your bliss? Better it will be before you go to the infinite ways of the outside world. Better it will be first you look within. If you cannot find there, then it is all right, you go and search outside. But it has never happened. Whoever has looked within has always found. Because it is already there, only a look is needed, a conversion, a returning of consciousness. Just a deep look. The further one pursues knowledge, the less one knows. Therefore, the sage knows without running about. In the running, you are missing, wasting life, energy, opportunity. Don't go on running about and about and about. Stop running. That's all meditation is about. Stop running. Sit quietly with closed windows and doors. Settle inside. Rest inside. Relax inside. Let the turmoil settle a little. Then start looking. It will be like groping in the beginning. In the beginning, the darkness will be too much. But as you become accustomed to it, the darkness starts changing its quality. It is just like when you come from the outside and it has been a hard day and then the sun has been too cruel. And you come inside the room of your house and you cannot see. Everything looks dark because the eyes are focused with the sun. The eyes are accustomed with too much light. Sudden change, the eyes will take a little time to settle, that's all. Patience is needed. When you move inwards, nothing will be seen. Don't be impatient. Don't say just after a minute that all the Buddhas are false. They say inside is bliss, I don't see anything. It happened to one of the most penetrating thinkers the West has ever produced. It happened to David Hume. Again and again coming across these Eastern teachings, go within. Close your eyes, see. One day he thought, let us try. Knowing well that there is nothing, these Eastern people are mad, illogical, irrational. Introverts, fooling themselves and nobody else. He said, better one day try. He closed his eyes, just a single minute, and he opened and wrote down in his diary that there is nothing except darkness, few thoughts floating, few sensations, and nothing else. Don't be so impatient. Wait. Let things settle inside. It takes time. You have been unsettling them for so many lives. Settling will take a little time, a little patience, and nothing else is needed. You need not try to settle them, because that will disturb them again. You will stir them more. You simply don't do anything. That is the meaning of Lao Tzu's beautiful phrase, Wei Wei, doing by not doing. You simply don't do anything and it happens. That is doing by not doing. You just close your eyes and wait and wait and wait, and you see layers of disturbance falling, settling, things falling into their places, and silence. And by darkness becomes light, and the One is known, by knowing which all is known, because that One is the seed. That art thou, sweet Ketu. Therefore the sage knows without running about, understands without seeing, accomplishes without doing. And that is the greatest accomplishment, which is accomplished without doing anything at all. Remember, whatsoever you can do cannot go beyond you. How can it go? If you do it, it will remain lower than you. It cannot go higher than you. Whatsoever you do will be part of your mind. It cannot be transcendental. Whatsoever you do will be done by the ego. It cannot be your being. So non-doing is the only way to do it. Sitting is still. Sitting quietly, not doing anything, and the grass grows by itself. And when the effort, the doing is still, such a tremendous and vast silence descends on you. I was reading a Japanese poem just few days before, a line of it. Penetrated me very deeply, became part of my heart. It says, when the bird is not singing, the mountain is yet more silent. When the bird is not singing, the mountain is silent yet more. When there is no doing, even the bird is no more singing. Nothing is there. Everything calm and quiet. And suddenly you become aware that nothing has been lacking from the very beginning. That which you were seeking, you have always been that. Suddenly you realize that the Master of Masters is sitting there on the throne, and you start laughing. Bokuju became enlightened. Enlightened? Don't take the word very seriously. It is nothing serious. It is the ultimate in fun. It is the last joke. Bokuju became enlightened and he started laughing, a belly laugh. He became crazy. people gathered and they started asking, "What is the matter? Please tell us. What has happened?" He said, "Nothing has happened." And I was mad, searching and seeking that which is already there in me. Whenever people used to ask Bokoju, "What you did when you became enlightened?" He said, "I laughed. And I laughed loudly." And he said, "I have not still stopped laughing. Whether you hear it or not, that is not the point. I have not still stopped laughing. What a joke. You have it already and you have been searching and seeking. And you could not find it. Not because it was not there, but because it was so much there and so close to you that you could not see it. Eyes can see that which is far away. Eyes can see which is distant, because eyes need a perspective. Hands can touch which is different and distant. Ears can hear which is outside." That's why Lao Tzu says he understands without seeing, because how can you see yourself? Who will see whom? The seer and the seen are one there. No eyes are needed. Who will do? Who will make the effort? It will be just like a dog chasing its own tail. It will be simply foolish. And this is what you are doing, chasing your own tail. Stop and see, it is your own tail, there is no need to chase it. And by chasing, you are not going to get it ever. By chasing, you miss. By non-chasing, you accomplish. Accomplices without doing. And then time disappears. Then mind disappears. Because mind is there to know something. Mind is the faculty to know. When you have known, there is no point for the faculty to remain. It simply disappears. Time disappears, because time is there because you are frustrated. It is created out of frustration so that you can hope in the future. And somehow you can bear the frustration and tolerate it and console yourself. Mind and time are not two things but aspects of one thing. When both disappear, for the first time you are in your absolute glory. Call it this way, you have become a god, a Buddha. And ask the awakened, they all say the same thing. That it is to be accomplished without any effort on your part. It is the effort that has created the whole mess. Dropping all effort, just sitting silently, looking within, we weigh enough for today.